Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of Fearlessly Becoming. I'm Stephanie, and we are on week two of Nonprofit November, and I'm excited to share my conversation with Heidi Brandt. She has started a nonprofit called Healing Heights. They have an event every September called Hell on the Hill, and you'll learn all about it in this episode, not to mention all of the wonderful things that they are doing in our community to support those who are in need of mental health support. And as always, we dive into Heidi's personal story and the background behind Healing Heights and how it all came to be. So we also have some really fun overlap, which is, you know, how the universe works, right? Everybody's connected in some way. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, a really important one to have. And remember that mental health is a real thing. And if you are in need of help, reach out to Heidi and her team, reach out to a local resource, reach out to a friend. It's important that you're still here. Before we jump into this conversation today, I just want to give another shout out to our friends at Artillery Media for being the exclusive sponsor for the month of November. They create badass websites that are functional, safe, and beautiful to look at. Check them out. Learn more at artillerymedia.com. Okay, let's get to it.
Can you hear me?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry about that. I don't know.
It's all good. It's all good. I'm glad that it worked out. It's also, it's so nice to meet you. I love that we have like this little interwoven connection through this
too. I know. Stacy's actually here. Do you want to say hi?
Yes. I wondered if I'd be able to get a surprise.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You're glowing. Did you work out today? Did you do some meditation?
It's the selfie light.
Nice. Good. I'm going to be reaching out. I just got back from France. You know what happened?
I want to hear all the things.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah. Are you? When did you get back?
Yesterday at 2 a.m.
Did you both go or was it just you?
No. She picked me up. She took one for the team, picked me up. So I didn't have to park my car at the airport for her. Yeah.
We'll reach out.
Yeah, I will. Okay, Ooh. Have fun.
Good to see you, Stacy. What kind of dog do you have?
He's a mutt. Hey, bub, come here. Come here. You say hi. Jump up.
Oh, hi,
this is Zeke.
Bubba. What's up, Zeke?
I was so curious. He's a rescue, and I was so curious that I did the DNA test or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're basically like, he's like 40% pit, which he has a little pit head. He has like 25-30% Great Dane. And a couple other things, I think a little bit of lab and whatever. And then literally the last 20%, they're like super mutt. We don't know. He's just a mutt.
Super mutt.
And that pretty much fits his description too. He's just a giant dork.
I love it so much. That's so great.
So yeah.
Okay. So another common thread that I think we have, you're also a realtor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So there was a house that I was looking at that I was going to potentially buy near like 17th and Van Dorn-ish. This would have been last winter, March?
Okay.
April, February, March.
Favorite neighborhoods.
Yeah. And it was a remodel. So one of my friends actually bought the house and flipped it. And they were the ones
Wait,
that were selling
it. So Jill and Dacia? Oh my gosh. So I'm the one that sold the house.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, they're so fun.
They're so great. So Jill, I used to coach at Orange Theory, and Jill was a member, and that's how I got to know her. Okay. And we just became friends. And then I happened to randomly run into her at Firehouse Subs, and she was telling me about this house that she was flipping, and I was looking to sell my house and move. And so I came and looked at it, and me and my boys were just a few blocks over, kind of near closer to Sheridan, and it didn't work out. And it was not supposed to work out, but it was. I'm like, I think you were the realtor on the other side.
Yep, that's crazy. What a small world!
So, yeah, there's like all these through lines.
There is.
So, when I posted, just to give a little bit of context, I've been doing this podcast since April, and I don't know if you've talked with Stacey much, but life has done its thing with me as well, and I've learned a lot. And part of starting the podcast was to just create a platform for really open and honest conversations about the things that are difficult in life, and not to brush them under the rug or pretend like they don't exist, but to really harness what we can learn from them and how they ultimately shape who we're becoming. And part of my journey, I actually started a nonprofit after my youngest was born. I spent a ton of time in the NICU with both of my boys. I started a nonprofit. It went dormant for like a decade. And then last year I tried to revive it and bring it back and had mild success, but then it just became something that was not financially sustainable. So I ended up having to dissolve the organization. And I'm like, I still have this piece of me that is so interconnected to the nonprofit world. And I'm like, let's use November to talk about nonprofits, people who are trying to bring support and systems into our community in a really positive way. And so I put a post out and you were tagged multiple times, and Healing Heights was tagged multiple times.
That's awesome to hear.
And so I'm like, I need to reach out. And then of course we have all these other random weird connections, which I'm like, this is meant to be.
I love it. That's awesome. That's awesome to hear.
So that's kind of the backstory. So are you originally from Lincoln?
So I grew up in Friend, which is 45 minutes from here. The small town kid that couldn't wait to get out kind of thing. But I originally had gone to school my freshman year in Mankato, Minnesota, because I was like, I'm out of here. I want to explore different things. Ended up coming back after my freshman year and went to Kearney, and then ended up in Lincoln for a couple years. And then I was like, okay, I'm ready. I want to go explore and just see what else is out there. So I ended up on the East Coast for about 15 years. And I was kind of like, I swear I'd never move back, all that. You know, I was mid-20s and I'm like, I'm out of here. And you don't realize also that, you know, your parents are going to get older, your siblings are going to have kids and all that stuff. So gosh, 7.5 years now I came back and didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, and got into real estate because the world that I was in out there doesn't exist here. It's in high-end spa management.
Okay, yeah.
But I love like interiors and design and all that kind of stuff. And hospitality has been my world forever in some capacity or not. And real estate's just another form of hospitality. And then I've had, just for my journey, which we'll kind of get into with the nonprofit side, I've always had it on my heart to do something bigger. And I had no idea what that was. I had my dog before Zeke was Boomer. He's no longer here, but he and I used to walk at Pioneers Park all the time.
Yeah.
And the sledding hill, the famous sledding hill at Pioneers Park. I had this idea because also exercise and sports and fitness has always been part of my journey, my healing journey. I was like, if I was going to do something, I just had this idea. If I was going to do something, it was going to be something like a physical challenge in some capacity. And the hill became kind of like a metaphor for life of like, sometimes this hill is going to suck.
Yes.
And sometimes life sucks, but there's, you know, doing laps around the hill, there's the side that sucks, and then you kind of have a recovery time or whatever. And then the tagline became for the event that went, then kind of evolved from that, was that you can rest, you can ask for help, but you can't quit, which is kind of like life. So sometimes, you know, when people get in trouble, it's because they get stuck on the hill and it's the hardest thing to do is to ask for help. Or even take a rest. So that kind of became the message behind the event, Hell on the Hill, which then has how healing. I did it backwards because in order to become a nonprofit, I had to have an actual foundation in order to take money in and give it away.
Yep.
So that's kind of where Healing Heights came from, was just to be the umbrella for Hell on the Hill events. And then that has turned into more of a resource page, but the ability to start having conversations and build relationships within Lincoln community and with different places like North Point or Centers, all the places like that. So
that's so unique that it started with an event and a physical challenge that then turned into a nonprofit. That's really beautiful. And I want to get into all of those things, but I'm also curious, as you were talking about life on the hill and how those challenges are so reflective of life, what is your go-to when you find yourself on the hill? Have you always found yourself in a position where it's easy to ask for help? No. Or no?
No, it's still not. Like, that's still something I talk about, is like, it's not. I was lucky enough when I was on the East Coast. So I spent about 10 years in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts. And kind of my journey was from when I was junior high school, was an eating disorder, was where was my device, I like to say. And didn't really even know that that's what it was when I was junior high school. It wasn't until I was in college, and it would, you know, I don't know if you know anything about eating disorders, but it ebbs and flows. Like, there's times where you're totally fine and it doesn't affect you, and then there's times where like a switch will go off and you're in it. And I did that roller coaster for until my mid-30s, really. It was when I had moved out to the East Coast, and I had, I'd call it in a cycle. And a good friend of mine out there at the time, I was probably early 30s at this point, she basically called me out and said, you know, I know what you're doing. And at first, of course, I was defensive, and you're full of it, and we're really good at covering our tracks for the most part. And then, but then I was also, I think, ready to be caught in some aspects. And so that kind of was like, okay. And she helped me find somebody that would, you know, a therapist. And the first two weren't great matches for me. And that's one thing I talk about, is just because you go and it's not a connection with that person, or it doesn't feel right, you don't have to stick with a therapist. And that doesn't mean therapy doesn't work. It just means you need to find somebody that you have that connection with and you feel vulnerable enough or free enough to really open up and let the work work. So my third person was Tammy, and she was life-changing. She did a process called EMDR.
Interesting that you bring that up, because I was supposed to have lunch with somebody last week and it got moved to next week on EMDR, because I'm very interested in it and I would love to explore doing it for myself.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what your experience was.
It was, so with Tammy, and we did, you know, first talk therapy, whatever, that's what I needed, was because my first person was basically like you see, I used to joke, it's like you see in the movies, you lay on a couch and she's behind you and I'm literally watching the clock tick going, oh my God, is this ever
going to happen? You're like, what's happening?
She's back here making her grocery list, I'm sure. But that's not what, I didn't know how to communicate. So she would be like, just say what's in your brain. And I was like, the only thing that's happening in my brain is, when is this freaking over with? Like, that's, I didn't know how to process what I was thinking in order to put it into words, because we didn't grow up communicating. Not knowing I could leave that, and I spent too much time going to her. But then I went to the next person, wasn't a great fit. And then that's when I found Tammy, and it was more like a conversation. We would just sit, have a conversation. She would ask good questions and allow me to talk. And then she introduced EMDR. And this, it was still, to me, it was like very woo-woo, like, this is, I don't know, I'll do it, but whatever.
Uh-huh. You're like, I'm going to keep my eye on this whole process. But like, sure, doc. Like, you.
Yeah, like, and so we would, she, in the office, you have, or this is how she would do it, you have, there's a device, and you held, you know, one in each hand, and then there's also a light on it, and they buzzed going back and forth. And then you also, with your eyes, follow this little light back and forth. And the idea is that it's breaking or breaking up the patterns. So she would say, like, our target, whatever we were going to talk about that day, and it might be something that I had been stuck on. Maybe it was a thought pattern that I just couldn't stop obsessing over or something like that. And so that would be the target, and she would turn them on, and I would just let my brain kind of work or whatever, and it'd go a minute or a minute and a half, and it would shut off, or she would shut them off, and then she'd be like, okay, what do you, you know, what came? And so there were times I'd be like, I'm not saying that out loud. And she'd be like, it's okay, just, you know, whatever. And I found out, like, I became fascinated with it, because it was just how my brain would work. And one of the examples, totally okay sharing, was like, there were many times where she'd shut it off and she'd be like, okay, what came up? And I would say, okay, I was on a merry-go-round. And sometimes there'd be boxes on the merry-go-round with me, and the boxes would either be, the whole box would be flying off, or the box would open and stuff would fly out of the box. And then, but I couldn't stop the merry-go-round. And so that would be like a thought, and then we'd go back into it. She'd be like, okay. And she wouldn't say anything other than, okay, let's go. And then just keep going, and you're, until it kind of be like, okay, I don't have anything else, or I can't get past that one. So it's just, it was so fascinating to me, of like how that was just how my brain processed, like, whatever. And it wasn't even that we would talk about that specific target specifically, and and stay stuck in, like, because sometimes I think people get stuck in those thought patterns, but they never have a way to move past them or whatever. And so usually I would be exhausted for a day, and then it would just be like it wasn't even a thought anymore. It was like sometimes it would happen that fast.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, so I became super fascinated with it, and the more we got into doing it, I don't want to say the harder the target, but maybe the more deep the target was of things that we were working on. She wasn't newer in it, but the whole idea of EMDR was pretty new.
Yeah.
But she's evolved enough that she'll talk about, and I actually had her, I did a YouTube video with her, because one of my goals was to have a YouTube channel where we talked to different modalities of therapy. But we had a great conversation, and she's now, and this was 15 years ago, 17 years ago, when I started, she'll take people like even vets with PTSD and super heavy traumas and things like that, and maybe 6 or 7 sessions, and they're past the hard stuff. So to me, that's pretty fascinating.
That's so powerful. And you think of, because I also have a really good friend whose husband is a firefighter, and we've talked about this a lot too, of the PTSD and the trauma that they are exposed to, and that they see, and that they don't necessarily work through. And so it's things like this that are available, and how do we make it more available? And that's actually one of the questions I had written down coming into this conversation, is I want to hear all about the organization and kind of how it all started. But also, like, we're in this really interesting time socially when it comes to mental health and mental health awareness. And it's almost become politicized in a way. And I'm curious how you personally are feeling about that landscape, but then also how Healing Heights as an organization can help support people as we navigate this.
That's a really good question, because I think that has, you know, I keep saying, like, we're in 2020, almost 2026, and we keep evolving in so many things in our world, but yet mental health still seems to be back here where it's such a hard, you know, it's not like a physical thing where I can go to the doctor and fix it and I can talk about it, and because it's so not black and white of what, you know, the spectrum is so big of what people experience and need that it makes it that much more difficult. And then for whatever reason, the stigma about going to therapy or saying I can go to therapy or asking for help is the biggest, you know, that's where people get in trouble. We just have this buck up society, especially with boys and men. For some reason that hasn't, in some ways it has, you know, gotten easier. And I don't know if it's just, we keep plugging away a little at a time. You know, I've had a million thoughts of like, what is this foundation even going to do? Is it going to make a difference? And cause there's a lot of stuff out there. And then I start having conversations with groups or people and realize like it does in some capacity. It might be like micro things, but hopefully those become what I call the butterfly effect down the road. But I don't have an answer for, other than we just keep having the conversations. And when it comes to the political stuff and the divide that we have, like, I shake my head so much because it's become such a dig your heels in kind of thing where people are just refusing to and suffering because of it. The fine line of where people have to want help as well. And that's the hardest line, because, you know, we can have all the resources and we can have and push them to do all the things, but you can't fix it for them.
100%. And a couple of things come to mind when you say that. There's another podcast that I listen to where they talk about addiction a lot and addicts and the life of an addict and how all the loved ones around them could want them to be on a different path and to get better. But until they themselves recognize it and want it, there's nothing that can be done. No. And same for people in your life. I've talked with my best friends about this. When you're on a life path and you see somebody kind of veering off of a life path that you know that you're like questioning what's happening, it's like you can't get them back on the life path. That's their life. That's their journey. Mm-hmm. That's their opportunity to learn. We can't stop it or interfere it as much as we may want to. That's not our role. And it's a difficult balance to strike.
And I'm sure, you know, we talk about, like, I'm sure it's the hardest thing for a therapist. I'm sure it's the hardest thing for a parent to watch a child. I'm sure it's the hardest, you know, somebody to watch a friend, like, knowing that they're going down a dangerous or bad, you know, path and not being able to just shake the crap out of them and be like, this isn't going to end well.
Yes.
And just keep them from, you know, the ultimate devastation, which is, you know, completing suicide. Even then, there's one of the things that is kind of going off, backtracking a little bit. One of the things that pushed me to actually take action and start doing the, you know, the event, the foundation, everything was, this would have been, this coming December would be 3 years ago. Girl I grew up with, her son was 19, Christmas Eve, committed suicide. And that spring, I'm with Home Real Estate, 69-year-old who'd been in Vietnam and did like a giant teddy bear, like the greatest guy. And he was pretty much retired, but still, you know, between playing golf in Arizona in the winter, he would come back and do some real estate. But he struggled around like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, and 4th of July. And Memorial Day, he went out in the backyard and committed suicide at 69. And I was like, okay. Like, it, and you know, we don't think of, especially people that age, doing that. And then, you know, just it, that was like kind of, I think, the straw that was like, okay, there's definitely still a need to be doing that or having a conversation around this stuff. It doesn't matter who it is or the age or in demographic or anything like that.
So, talk to me a little bit about how you started the event, Hell on the Hill, and you just had it in September, didn't you?
We just had our second one. Yeah. Okay. September 21st was the second one. So it, again, it started with kind of with the idea of just when I was walking around Pioneers Park, I would take Boomer out there and we'd, you know, run around. And I mentioned it to a friend of mine who I grew up where his name is Ryan Rickabaugh. He's actually on the board. He and I grew up together literally from diapers to graduation, the small town thing. And he had been, a principal for a lot of years at Waverly and had left that and went back and finished his PhD and does a lot of stuff with education and curriculum. And so we just happened to be having a conversation and around the kitchen table. And he's like, hey, you should meet so-and-so who happens to work with some school systems. And she's a psychologist. And he's like, I think this is a great idea. You should meet her. Maybe she'd have some ideas or whatever. Well, the three of us then just kept talking about it. And all of a sudden, we're like, let's do it. And then I was like, oh, crap, we're going to do this.
What a great idea. Oh, now we have to execute.
Oh, now I have to do that? I'm really good at having ideas. I'm not so great at the execution part. But we just kept talking. And then the back end was what held me up because I was like, oh, like figuring out the nonprofit side. And I didn't realize that the government makes it really hard to do something like that. But then it's insane.
So consuming.
Hiring an attorney and just like whatever, make this happen.
Yep.
So we had the first event a year ago, 2024, and with just the three of us on the board, and it was baptism by fire the whole way. But it ended up being such a special day. Even we had a weather hiccup at the end and ended up at Kenoyer Gardens instead of Pioneers Park because we had thunderstorms and there was no way we were going to be able to have it. So it was either cancel it or have it inside, and they were amazing. Sure. Let us come out there. But the event itself still was awesome. We had like Lincoln Fire Department came and did the first lap with us. Like they're the first lines a lot of times. We had UNL students come out and they just come out, they hung out, they did some laps with people, they took pictures, they were great. And then just the conversations that we had in the real estate community has been awesome. You know, the support that I've gotten. And then the second year, this the one that just happened, we had actually at Tanker Hill out at Arnold Heights Park. And it was perfect weather, couldn't have asked. It was so much nicer to have it outside just because it was what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, the vibe of it.
Yeah. And so we had Lincoln Fire Department come out again and they did the first lap. And then everybody just kind of goes from there. We doubled the UNL students that came out. And they're so fun. Like, so it's 50 laps. So on the hill, it was about 5.5 miles.
Ooh.
So this one, yeah. And so, and there, and the hardest part is that there's athletic ability from, you know, we had guys that ran the whole thing and were done super fast. And we had one girl that was the best story. She literally had just started her fitness journey a couple months ago and found out about it from Capital City Fitness, which I went and talked to them. Mike Babard is awesome, who owns that. And she had just joined their gym a couple months ago, and she came out and she was bound and determined. So you could do it individually, or you could do it in teams.
I love it.
And she was bound and determined to do all 50 laps by herself. And she was the last one on the hill by about 30 minutes. And so the last 10 laps, there were a couple UNL students that had hung out this whole time. And then the board and a couple other people, and then her kids and husband had been there for a while. And they said, you know, we all did the last 10 laps with her, and she finished it.
How inspiring. And
yeah,
just
that was pretty special to end
the community of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was pretty cool ending for that. But yeah, the goal is just to grow it in numbers every year and make it more impactful and obviously raise more funds to be able to help people. And
will it be in September every year?
We did that for a couple of reasons. One, September is Suicide Awareness Month. But then also the end of September, everyone's back in school, university, or, you know, the colleges are back, kind of everybody's back in routines. There's never going to be a perfect day where it fits for everybody. Everyone's like, well, why don't you do it on Saturday? And I'm like, honestly, I will compete with church before I compete with Nebraska football.
like know your audience.
I know where I live. People will give up a Sunday. They won't give up Nebraska football. So we're going to do it on Sunday mornings. It'll be the same weekend. And we just pray for good weather. And if it doesn't, we'll have, hopefully have a backup plan at Kenoyer if we need it. But
so do people sponsor laps? Do they fundraise to support a team? Like, how does that work?
They can support. So we had some people that knew they couldn't be there that day. And they're like, I still registered. Give that spot away to somebody who may not be able to either afford it. It's $50 for a ticket. You can have teams up to four. So if you want to create a team, there's a way to do that with the registration. And then the sponsorships came from everything from donations, or we had like Kincaidor and Sideshow did the porta potty in the water, you know, so stuff like that. It doesn't have to be a monetary thing, but the things that we needed to have the event were also considered sponsorships. There's different ways to be involved without necessarily giving a money donation.
So then talking a little bit more about the organization itself. So it's all around raising awareness, mental health, support, local resources. So as you're raising money and the funds that you receive, how does that go back into the community? How do people receive the support that they need?
So we're still working. We've got some things in the works. With North Point, I don't know if you've heard of North Point Recovery System or Recovery. They had just come to Lincoln, maybe a couple months before our first event. They've been in Omaha a while, and they're around the nation, but they've been awesome. And Centerpoint is also another one. And then there's a couple of smaller ones, and we're really trying to build the relationships to say, hey, if you have people that don't necessarily have the funds but need, whether it's recovery or just the support of therapists, also talking to a few therapy groups in town. So we can't necessarily say we're going to give like to 10 individuals or things like that, because we can't know who the money and make sure that they're actually using it for those purposes kind of thing.
Sure.
So it's creating the relationships with the organizations and letting them do the back end stuff. A lot of it too is going to be what we're working on for this next year's resources throughout, not just having one big event, but doing something else throughout either the winter, or we're talking about putting together a youth event, workshop style, introducing them to ways they can cope with things. Because I think where we fail our youth and kids is we don't teach them coping mechanisms from the beginning. And then they, you know, become adults that don't know how to handle hard life situations that are most definitely going to come at some point in their life. So
without a doubt.
Starting that as something else that we can do in the community is having those conversations with kids or with youth of saying, hey, you know, things are going to hit hard sometimes, and these are some ways you have to figure out how to manage that and get past those things.
And it's so hard. I have two boys, and we're in peak big emotion stage. And it is difficult because I get it. Like the things that they crash out over to them are really big deals. And the things that I say to them, I'm like, you guys, I get that this is a big deal to you right now because this is your scope of your world. This is what you know. But if we can't figure out how to manage this experience, life just gets more complex and complicated. So we think this is difficult. I love you.
Yeah, and doing that, but not taking away from what they're experiencing.
Exactly.
Not valid. Like that's, yeah, that's that.
It is absolutely valid what you are experiencing because you don't have the life experience yet to understand how right. complicated and complex things can get. To you, this is your world. This is the biggest deal that it could be. I get that. So like, let's work through it. But like, we've got to lay the groundwork for how to maneuver and navigate these because it's just going to get exponentially more difficult.
Yeah. And the hardest part with that, you know, I obviously you're more aware and all of these kind of things. And, you know, I've my own personal family who doesn't have the ability. He doesn't deal with stuff the best way.
And then yeah, those patterns.
It just keeps getting passed on. And then, you know, trying to break the cycles of is just adding another challenge of what, you know, what we need to get past. But
well, yeah. You too, because you said you came from a family that didn't talk about these things, mm-hmm. right? So you found your own self in a situation of navigating an eating disorder and not mm-hmm. knowing how to talk about it. I mean, same with me. We didn't talk about the hard feelings or the difficult challenges. It was like, yep, it happens. And then
move on.
Okay. Yeah.
Just move on.
What do I do with this? So it is, but, and I'm not quite sure what it is that in people who almost like wake up and then become aware of, oh, this is the impact I can have. Mm-hmm. I get to pick which route I go of the impact. I'm not sure what that light switch is, but I'm grateful that we had it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's, I think it's more people would have it if they chose to, because it's not an easy path. Going to therapy is not easy. Looking in the mirror is certainly not easy. And I think mm-hmm. people have the chance to do that. And then they're like, nope, that's too hard. I'm just going to stay back here and not change and not see, you know, what I could see or, you know yeah. better, do better doesn't fit for everybody.
There was something I saw on Instagram a couple weeks ago. Yeah, love Instagram and the random reels that you pop up. But it was this dude and he's like, why do I always got to know better? Because then I know better. So I got to do better. And if I didn't know better, then I wouldn't have to do better.
Exactly.
But I know better. And so then if I don't do better, then I know I didn't do better because I know I could have done better. But why do I? Why?
So true. It's so true. I'm like, I want to go back to being ignorant.
Yes. Like sometimes ignorance is bliss. It's like, oh man, I know better. So I got to do better.
It's 100% true.
Cycle.
It is. It is. I don't know. We were the chosen ones, I guess.
Evidently.
Also known as the black sheep, I think.
Yes. Yep. The ones that are just like, doo-doo-doo. I don't fit in a box or a label.
Makes holidays fun.
Yep. Okay, friends. Quick pit stop before we get back to the conversation with Heidi. I have had the pleasure of partnering with Artillery Media twice now to build a website. And whether you are in the market for creating a website from scratch, if you are looking for a redesign, if you are looking for a collab where they do part of the work, you do part of the work, they are the best at what they do. And I could not recommend them enough. So if you're looking at your current website thinking, she might need a little bit of love. Or if you have a brand new idea and are wanting to get it off the ground, but you need a website to, you know, feel legit, then reach out to my friends at Artillery Media and learn more at www.artillerymedia.com. Let's get back to it. So if people are listening and they are looking for help, they need help, and they're in that place of ready to ask for help. If they come to you, what does that look like?
So if they're coming to us as far as like saying, hey, I, you know, saw your stuff, I understand you can add, then we're going to figure out where the best place is to get them help. And whether it's us reaching out to that place to say, hey, you know, we have somebody who, how can they, what do they need to do to get in with you guys or whatever that is, or just, you know, if they're capable or willingly, you know, enough to make those calls or play, you know, go to those places on their own, then that's awesome too. But also it's just knowing that if they go and it's not the right place or they don't get, you know, the answers that they, or the help that they think that they should have in that first, you know, interaction, that's not the end all be all. And that just because one place didn't work or one person didn't work, like, either come back to us or, you know, let's keep trying and figure out what the best place is for you or the best, you know, person or whatever that is. Because I think that's the other thing is, you know, people are like, oh, well, I tried once, didn't work. And that's also, like I said, those are all part of the whole hard conversations of, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm ready for help and then actually go get it. But also knowing that the first time or the first interaction with somebody or someplace isn't, doesn't mean it's the actual answer or the best place for you. And that's, it's just what makes everything harder. Because like I said, you can go to a doctor and get your broken foot fixed and everybody's going to pretty much do the same process of putting a cast on or whatever.
Yeah.
And this isn't that way.
This is very nuanced to each individual. And talking about making it harder, and we can cut this out if you want me to. I've had so many friends reach out to therapists, reach out to different groups, trying to get in. Either they don't accept the insurance or they're full capacity and can't take on new clients. How do you navigate the whole insurance process and making sure people have a spot to land?
That is the most frustrating part, to be honest. It really is. There, especially after COVID, you know, a lot of therapists were just completely burned out and have left the profession. And it's unfortunate because there isn't enough. There's not enough resources right now. And that's the hardest thing to navigate. What I have told people or what I've tried, you know, to help people with is, you know, if they can't get into a therapist or insurance and they absolutely cannot afford, like, yes, we'll help in some capacity, but find your people. Like, you know, there's also the side where you can do some things on your own without therapy or without a, you know, an organization like North Point or whatever it is. There's different things that are free, whether, you know, if it's an addiction thing, there's AA, if there's other things out there that you just have to keep digging or find people that will help you keep digging for those. Find your group of support outside of that stuff and just keep plugging away. I wish it was a better answer than that. I wish there was an easy answer to say, oh, you can call, you know, 1-800-I-FIX-EVERYTHING and there's a resource for it and you'll get right in. And right now there's not. And that's just part of the struggle that everybody, that we're navigating through as well.
And I really do think that it is an epidemic, because I think that we are getting to a place where people are feeling more comfortable to say, hey, I need help. I know the value that this can bring. And now that we have this overwhelming number of people who are like, okay, I'm ready. Help me. Now I'm ready to tap in. We like don't have the resources to support it. And it's this chicken or the egg, and it's so difficult. And then you add in the layer of insurance, which that is a totally different topic.
It is a totally different topic.
Spin out on several hours. But like there are so many roadblocks. Talking about like getting a nonprofit established, there are so many hurdles and challenges to get just even a 501c3 set up and organized. Mm-hmm. It's the same process. And like, why are we making some of these basic human needs so difficult to access?
Yeah, it's very true.
So frustrating.
People have abused them in the past, and that's why. I mean, that's what it comes down to, unfortunately.
Yep.
So.
100%. Well, if you figure that out, you just let me know. Just solve that problem.
Yeah, right? No, I mean, I know that there's free resources around Lincoln and the communities and, you know, that will help, or, you know, and like I said, it's not a one size fits all kind of thing. And it's knowing that one of the things that we're, and I'm still building out the back end of the website for this specific part is like, when people, this came up because she was a client of mine, became a friend, and I had no idea that her sister was battling bipolarism. Mm-hmm. And she literally had just gotten through a period, her and her mom, her sister was in Chicago, and it was having a manic episode and was basically found running down the streets naked in Chicago. So what do? They put her in jail.
Right.
And they're like, we didn't know what to do or who to call. And the thing that people kept saying was like, you don't start looking for resources until you're in the middle of a crisis. And then you have no idea where to go.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with people. It's like, we didn't know that we needed this stuff until we were in the middle of it. And then you're just in panic mode, scrambling to figure out anything. And then it's almost too late of like helping somebody in that capacity because you're already 70 steps behind of trying to help them. So part of what we want to accomplish or, you know, put out there is like, okay, if, you know, obviously there's the main lines of 911 and, you know, the bigger resource centers, but, you know, maybe this is the place you start at least to be able to get something or get you on the right track faster at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you were talking a little bit earlier about your personal story, how do you balance being a leader and starting this nonprofit, being human, and also someone who's still healing and helping others heal too? How do you balance all of that?
I don't know if balance is the right word. I try to say it's more of like a harmony of like,
we navigate.
We navigate, exactly. I think it's more knowing that I'm still going through the process in some capacity too, but I might be fewer steps ahead of some people and I don't have it all figured out. And there's days where, that's that one in there. There's days I still fail at being a kind person and just navigating all that as well. But knowing, one, that there are resources, knowing that I do have my people now, and that's been the biggest game changer. And I don't know if that's being, you know, in your 40s and 50 and whatever, and just knowing more wisdom, I guess. But having those people around me and knowing that, I'm not going to be perfect every day, and some days I'm at 20% and some days I'm at 80%. I know the tools that I need to do when I start to fall back into things or have thoughts that I'm not, you know, comfortable with having or whatever those things are. I think it's more of just being the aware, and as far as helping other people, knowing that for a lot of people, I'm a few steps ahead of them is all.
Yeah. And I think that is what is so relatable. And what I get drawn to as well are people who are currently navigating. They may have more knowledge, experience, wisdom than I do, but knowing that they're not sitting there, tables turned, saying, well, I've got it all figured out. I did the work. I did it. So I'm going to now teach you and tell you how to do it. And I'm like, that doesn't resonate with me. Mm-hmm. I need somebody who can be like, hey, I have great days. I have not so great days. Mm-hmm. This is where I still struggle. This is what I've learned. Take what I've learned. Hopefully you can avoid some of the pitfalls that I've found myself in. And I think that's a beautiful way to approach it, and appreciate your perspective on that.
Yeah. No, I will never say I have it all figured out. There's always going to be some curveball that gets thrown. And I think that's just being human on a journey. And just, you know, learning what works for you, like the gym and exercise and walking outside and nature. And I know that those are things that are my go-to things. And if I get in trouble, which I haven't in a long time, I still know that I can call Tammy and have a therapy session. And she would, you know, she would be there. And if that's still needed at some point, then I have that in my back pocket.
And I know for me, when I start to feel myself deviate and get misaligned, I can feel it in my body. And it's like, you, to be able to recognize some of those things, it's like you have to be quiet enough to be able to notice some of those subtle shifts. Are you similar in that way?
Yeah, like, for sure.
You can like physically feel the energy shift in your body.
Yeah. And I know, you know, I used to get so triggered by certain things, and it's learning those triggers and learning that, you know, emotional maturity is not being triggered by those things, but how do you deal with them outside of it? And I still fail at it, you know, especially when it comes to some family stuff or whatever, you know, yeah. If I've opened the door too much or let boundaries slide, then I can still get triggered and I kick myself every time and I'm like, okay, like... back it up. But I think learning, you know, whether it's work or, you know, just overload or whatever, like knowing what your own boundaries are and being able to navigate that. And if you're, you know, letting things slide, it's like you said, taking a step back and being quiet and being okay. Like, I need to come back to myself first and then I can help, you know, move forward in the right way.
And I was actually going to ask you at the beginning when we were talking about your personal story, as you were going through the EMDR and kind of the cycles with the eating disorder that you were talking about and referencing, did you ever identify like a core of what activated it or what triggered it?
I think it was people with eating disorders want control of something. And so it's it's total misperception. People with eating disorder don't have control, but in the sense of like, being super strict with food, or eventually my whole spectrum of it was from one end to the other. I was either binging and purging, or I would over-exercise and not eat, or become super. I even did bodybuilding competitions, and for me that was just a form of eating disorder. For some people, it's an actual, you know, they can do that and be healthy with it. And it wasn't. I was in my 20s when I was doing it. It was just an obsessive way to eat and exercise. I was needing to control something in my life. And so I think that's, and like I said, I didn't even know that that's what it was for years. You know, looking back, I figured it actually probably started when I was junior high or early high school, and then it just progressed.
Isn't it wild how drawn us humans are to control?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We will go to great lengths to get even the feeling or sense that you have control over something.
Yeah, for sure. In some capacity. And there's a whole gamut of ways to do that, for sure.
Yep. It's wild. Well, thank you for sharing some of your personal story. I appreciate that. That's a tremendous hill, as you referenced, to overcome. As you've been working in this space now for a while, what transformation, and maybe it's your own, have you witnessed that really reminds you that this work matters and that it does work?
I mean, I'm probably obviously mine. I used to be shameful or embarrassed to talk about my journey because, you know, but I then realizing like the people that would talk about theirs was helping me. And so that was like, okay, like it's going to make some people uncomfortable if I talk about what I did or went through, and that's not my problem anymore.
Yes.
So knowing that if I'm talking about it, it makes it more acceptable for other people to know that, one, because this is what I struggled with. I didn't think anyone else was ever having the thoughts I was having. They were never feeling the way I was feeling. And that's not true. Like, so many people were having or do have experienced that. And part of the foundation and the whole thing behind this is I don't want people to ever feel like they're alone in what they're going through, because it's not true. And we put ourselves on this, you know, isolated thought pattern, or, you know, and think that there's no way that anyone would, that people knew what I was thinking. They'd put me in some padded room, and that's just not true. So I think probably my own journey has been the biggest. There was a time that I didn't want to be here, and on our website there's a video that we had done before the first event, and it's me kind of talking about that. And there's dates that starts out with a video, and one of those dates is the day that I didn't want to be here anymore. And so I think just being able to talk about it and give other people permission to know that they're not ever going to be alone if they don't want to be, and that there's always going to be help out there if they'll accept it or go do it, is probably the biggest thing moving forward with what we're trying to do.
On that date where you didn't want to be here anymore, how did you get through that? How did you get yourself out of it?
My dog. To be honest, I had pulled into the garage and shut the door and was having, you know, it was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this. And my dog was inside.
These pets, they are, angels. Makes me super emotional to hear.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, you're good. Are you apologizing? I just interviewed someone a couple weeks ago and I was like, I don't think I've had a single episode where someone hasn't cried. This is evidently my MO.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever been able to tell that story without crying. So, and when I lost that dog, because he was a rescue as well, when I rescued him in Massachusetts, and oh my God, he was such a pain in the butt, stubborn, but he was such a, I think when you have that one dog that navigates all the hard things with you, he literally was an angel. And that was the hardest thing, was losing him. I had moved back here 4 years ago, I think. Just 40, yeah. And I was like, there are people I would have rather put down than.
I get it. I get it. We can cut that out. It's fine. But like, yes. Accurate. Oh man. I am so grateful that you are so open about all of this, because I think, and again, as you are talking about the reasons for starting this organization and not wanting people to feel like they're alone or not seen, that is literally why I started the podcast, mm-hmm. is because I don't want people to ever feel like the things that they're experiencing in life, whatever it is that they've gone through or choices that they've made, that they should feel shamed and judged for what they're doing. Life happens. You don't always maybe make the best choices.
Yeah.
But we're all in this human experiment together. And if we can create some compassion and some understanding, and as you were talking earlier too about, you know, how do we overcome this mental health crisis that we're in? It is truly chipping away, and like your openness and ability and willingness to share your story and create an organization to help others, it is the ripple effect. And hopefully having this conversation, maybe somebody listening is like, ooh, I have access to something or someone who can better support or create another network. You never know. And like, this is why I love having these kinds of conversations. Yeah.
The best part that I found, and not expecting it, was when I started, we were like more so promoting the first event, and I was reaching out to everybody and everybody who I could think of that to talk to either groups. And those conversations, because I know I start out half the time saying, you know, I want to talk about the thing that nobody wants to talk about. And the conversations that would come out of those groups, there was always people that would stay after and say, you know, my nephew or my brother or my so-and-so or whatever. And it was those, by far, has become my favorite part of this whole journey, is having those conversations and letting people, giving them permission to say, you know, you can talk about it, and it may not be, it's definitely not the easiest thing to talk about. And it's not something that we just openly, you know, oh, hey, how are you? How's your mental health today? You know, we don't do that. That has by far become my favorite part of these conversations and throughout the way.
Random question. Do you have recommended questions or statements instead of just like, hey, how you doing today? Like ways that people can ask somebody and actually get to a real answer instead of being like, yep, I'm good. How about you? Good. Okay. Off we go.
How's the weather? Yeah.
Right.
More so open-ended questions of, it's funny because I'm going to tie this into real estate a little bit, of starting conversations. We call them forward questions, asking about friends and family. How is, what if they're working or retired, what's their, you know, what's coming up in their world? If are they traveling? Are they whatever? And allowing people to just, not yes and no questions, allowing people to answer questions in a way that they're, most people are going to genuinely open up without consciously opening up. And it allows you or the person asking those questions to then have follow-up questions. And if something's going on or something's deep, you can either read it in them, or they'll say something and you'll be like, kind of tell me more about that. You said this, tell me more about that. What does that mean? Or what is that? You know, somebody might, you know, ask a question about their family, and they're like, oh, my wife is going through chemo right now. And you're like, that must be really, really hard. How is that, how are you doing? And how is that affecting what's going on at home? It generally becomes just an organic conversation. And that's the easiest, I guess, or the best way to, without just bluntly asking, because they're not going to answer that. No, I'm fine. But asking them in a way that allows them to open up organically usually leads to more questions, which then just keeps the conversation going.
I love that. So you'll obviously have the event in September, next September, the Hell on the Hill. But what else is next for Healing Heights? What's the dreams on the horizon?
So continuing conversations with local places, fostering those relationships, and then working on the youth thing for this winter, and putting that together. The other thing that we've talked about, we actually have a board meeting tonight. I don't know if you have ever heard of the poverty games. The idea was putting people in situations or in groups, and then putting them in situations where, let's say you have six people in a group and they're made up characters in this situation. Sally is a single mom and works 10 hours a day when her kid's a junior high kid. Bob is, is a mechanic, has his own shop, and his wife is battling cancer. And you go through it, everybody has a story. And then all of a sudden, the scenario is the single mom, Sally, is late for work because her kid is sick, and now she's going to get fired at work. And all the things that you don't think about that are happening for people.
Yeah.
And puts them in situations that make life really, really hard. Taking a version of that, and not just the economic status of it, but how does that affect their mental health? And corporations or businesses and their employees have these things happening every day. And they're not seeing the stuff that's happening behind the scenes and how it's affecting why they're acting out at work or why they're not performing, right, or why they're not whatever. And instead of just reprimanding them for job performance, finding out why the situation is happening, and creating those scenarios and saying, okay, let's have a human experience through this, and putting people who may have, don't have socioeconomic troubles or challenges, but putting them in the character of that and letting them basically feel what that feels like.
Interesting. I love that idea. Because again, it's all about giving people perspective, mm-hmm, right? Because yeah, everybody has a story. Everybody has something going on. We're not always going to know all the specifics, but how can we lead with compassion and curiosity, mm-hmm, instead of
the whole empathetic, and we, these are all ideas for out there, but having the ability to do that in corporations, but also bringing a youth version of that, of, hey, your classmates may not have the same situation that you have, or maybe going through some stuff at home that you don't know about, and let's tone down the bullying and
the criticism. I tell my boys this too. Listen, I'm not a perfect mom. I do not want that to be out there, but like I feel like I thrive in some certain situations, and I think these are one of them. But they'll talk to me about a kid who has been really mean to them, or they call them names, or they're really critical, or they're, whatever it is that they're doing to them. And I'll say, well, how do you respond? And they'll say they either tell them to stop or they're being mean. And I'm like, perfect. Like, set your boundary and do what you need to do. Mm-hmm. I said, also recognize that kids who bully or lash out or are always trying to get attention, there's something that's driving that. There's something behind that. Maybe they're not getting what they need at home. Maybe they are, or maybe they have something else going on that you don't have access to. So always remember that when you're interacting with
that's
kids
awesome.
Like that. Like those, these, listen, I have my moments. these are my moments.
But just having that conversation with them and making them aware, like, oh yeah, it's not just surface, they're not just being a turd right now. Like, most kids that act out are because they want attention, even if it's negative attention.
Exactly. There is something that they are going after. I mean, shit, we see it in adults. Like, not just 11-year-olds.
Oh no. That's a whole nother rabbit hole.
We don't have enough time for that today. Okay, so for the listeners, for the community, how can they contribute? How can they get involved? What are recommendations from you on how they can kind of team up with Healing Heights?
So the healingheightsfoundation.com is the website, and there's a way to donate if it's just a monetary thing. If they want to be involved in a different way, like for the event or whatever, like we'll start registrations again in 2026. Again, we're just trying to get the word out as far as, and we know this event isn't for everyone to do physically, totally understand that. It doesn't mean they can't come out. We had people come out and hang out on the side, you know, with their lawn chairs and just be a part of it that way. We had Aaron Davis actually kicked us off this year, which was awesome. So there's a lot of different ways to be involved, even if it's not the actual physical event. Having places to go and talk and speak, and whether it's groups or organizations or companies or whatever, like, I love that. And having those conversations and talking about whether it's in the capacity of the workplace or home or whatever, just the spectrum of how mental health is affecting our community. You can reach me through the website, or I'm a realtor, I'm all over. You can find me pretty easily. Cell phone, email, it doesn't matter. I'm pretty easily accessible, but I would love to just keep having conversations with people.
Absolutely. And then my final question, and I am, again, just so grateful for the conversation and that you were so open. And I think that that is such a beautiful thing. But if somebody is listening and if they are struggling right now, what message would you want them to hear?
That they're not alone, that they, whatever it is, and it might feel like there's no way out of it. You know, hear stories about, unfortunately, it's a financial thing and or a health thing, and they don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. And I can tell you, I've been there. When I was in my darkest place and didn't want to go anymore, it was mostly financial, which seems so dumb, you know, when you are on the other side.
It's so like, real.
There's something that's, it's always going to be fixable in some capacity. But when you're in the middle of it, like, it just feels like there's no way out, but there's always going to be a way out. So reach out to anybody, reach out to us, reach out to, you know, at least have the conversations to know that we can navigate it with you, or somebody's going to navigate it with you if you just give them a chance and ask for help. So that's the hardest one, unfortunately, but it's the biggest message.
Absolutely. Again, thank you for what you're doing with the organization and the community.
Yeah. Awesome conversation. So thank you for what you're doing and putting stuff out there.
Yeah. Happy to do it. This makes my heart feel so fulfilled. And I know that somebody listening needed to hear this message today. And I'm excited for what is coming up for Healing Heights.
Awesome. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
See ya. Okay. Before you scoot away for the rest of your day, let's just take a minute, debrief. There were a couple takeaways from this conversation and then the conversation from last week with Susan, which if you've not checked that one out, hit that one up, hit pause quick, go back to it. We'll be here when you get back. But when I talk with people who are in some of the initial building phases of a nonprofit, those are some of the most challenging times in an organization. I started a nonprofit a long time ago. I gave it two cracks at trying to get it launched and off the ground. And it is very, very challenging. And you kind of get stuck in this pattern of not having enough financial backing in order to qualify for additional funding, but not having enough financial support to get you to what your big dreams are wanting to accomplish, and really giving the support and giving back to the communities that you're wanting to give until you hit a certain size. And then I think the dynamic changes a little bit. So as you're listening to these conversations, even if monetarily it does not work out for you right now to support these organizations as they're getting off the ground, check out volunteer opportunities. And outside of the two organizations that we've talked to so far this month with the Ember Project and Healing Heights, we're headed into the holiday season. And now more than ever, check out those local organizations, those local nonprofits. How can you step in? How can you help? Make it a family event. Make it a tradition. Because there are so many people who are really wanting to give back and make a difference and have an impact based on their own personal experience and wanting to share that with others. And the ripple effect and the impact of that is so powerful. So I hope, if nothing else, that we take away from these conversations this month is that humanity is still alive and well. We've got two organizations down. We've got two to go. So tune in next week. We will be talking to the executive director at the Center for People in Need. So that one is quite timely based on everything that's happening in our current landscape. As always, my friends, be kind to yourself. You deserve it. See you next time.